Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host, and this episode we are talking to Tony Parrott, the Executive Director of the Louisville and Jefferson County Metropolitan Sewer District. Thanks for finding some time to chat.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot of different ways people think you pronounce Louisville, so hopefully I'm close enough on the mark there.
You are very close.
All right. I'll settle for that. So I'm glad you could find some time to talk to us. We're here at the Utility Management Conference. I wanted to get some perspective on what's happening out there in your area. One of the things I was reading about are all of the infrastructure projects you have underway. It seems like there's kind of been a real big surge the past couple of years for you all. What's going on?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of economic growth in downtown Louisville. I think throughout Louisville and Jefferson County, we have about $12 billion of economic activity that's going on right now, including new hotels and new convention centers and a lot of new development and revitalization of the downtown district. Mm. Being Louisville MSD is very active and very involved with Louisville Forward and making sure that we are aware of all of the developments and all of the expansions that are being programmed in so that we can stay ahead of them with infrastructure expansion or infrastructure growth that may be needed throughout Jefferson County.
So what are some of the big projects you have?
Well, we have most of our capital work that we've been focused on, particularly over the last 5 years, has been associated with our federal consent decree requirements, doing a lot of combined sewer overflow reduction projects, basin projects. We also just last month just broke ground for a new $200 million underground CSO tunnel along the Ohio River there in Louisville. And that project needs to be done by 2020. And so as we are ramping up and trying to complete all of our federal consent decree requirements, we still have other needs within our system. And we have developed a 20-year critical repair and reinvestment plan, which is estimated around $4 billion over the next 20 years. So
that's probably,
we're really doing a lot of conversation with our local public officials and our local stakeholders to try to get support moving forward so that not only can we comply with the consent decree, but we can address all major risks that exist within our infrastructure because the challenge is that a lot of our infrastructure is old and it's aging, and we're starting to see catastrophic events in terms of sewer collapses in downtown Louisville.
Okay,
we've had major street cave-ins on Broadway and Main Street.
Wow.
We've also had massive water main breaks that have flooded Shelby Park area of Louisville. And so we're seeing this more often than not. And when you add that to the increased frequency of extreme storm events, you know, we think that, you know, these systems need to be addressed. We have responsibility for flood protection. And as you can probably been following in the Mississippi River Valley, in the Ohio River Valley right now, there's a real risk of flooding. And in Louisville, we operate 16 major flood pump stations and responsible for 29 miles of levee that protects the city from flooding. And so a lot of those flood pump stations are approaching 75 years old. It's hard to get replacement parts. And so risks are there. And so we're trying to get out in front of those things so that we can avoid catastrophic failure and economic ruin of a very vital part of our county.
On that economic front, so spending money on water infrastructure isn't just fixing it so you can keep providing the water. It comes with, it's an economic driver in and of itself, building, investing in, providing infrastructure. So I'd like to kind of get your further thoughts on that.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of national conversation about the economic value of what we bring to the table from a water and a wastewater perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, collectively across the country, water and wastewater utilities provide about $550 billion of economic activity in our operations and our capital programs that sustain about 300,000 jobs annually in our country. And so when you think about where we're going as a country and where we're going as a water industry, the value of water and the economic impact that it is bringing to our communities has to be talked about even more because a lot of folks, even though they don't want to hear about rate increases or things that are necessary to upgrade our systems, there is a value portion or a community benefit portion of making those investments. And they are to be able to sustain the current system for public health and safety, of course, protecting the environment, but also allowing for economic development and resiliency of our cities, particularly our urban core, and also creating job opportunities in those communities that where areas are seeing a lot of unemployment still, and in some areas, underemployment. And so what we're trying to focus on is how we can communicate the value of what we do, the economic engine that we are responsible for, and also the fact that it can be an opportunity to create jobs and put people to work.
Well, you just touched on three or four questions I want to follow up on here. And one is the kind of expansion of infrastructure you have going on is a sign of a pretty strong local economy there. You talked a little bit before about how you really work with the developers and keep track of that. Could you just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, the development in Louisville is something that really is happening all over. And whether it's the Ford plant, for example, announcing that they are going to add a $900 million expansion to the Ford plant there in Louisville, or if it's new hotels that are being built. We have a brand new Omni Hotel that is opening up actually in about 2 weeks in downtown Louisville. And so all of that is something that spurs economic development and growth. There's a lot of expansion of park areas and residential neighborhoods throughout eastern Jefferson County where we have to be programmed in working with the development agency called Louisville Ford and other groups to make sure that we are either able to serve those developments or we're putting systems in place that ultimately will allow the region to continue to grow.
And one of the other things you talked about is infrastructure and funding. And you mentioned that you were just in D.C. having conversations on where things may go with an infrastructure package from Congress and so forth. So what's kind of your thoughts on what's been put out there by the White House and what maybe Congress will be taking up?
I think folks are really still digesting really what is being put out there, because when you look at it on its surface, in terms of federal discretionary grant funds, that amount of money really isn't increasing for water and wastewater. About $200 billion allocated for water and wastewater, either through the SRF program or through WIFIA and other places. But I think the strategy is that with WIFIA and with partnering with state and local governments and working with what they call P3 opportunities, there's an opportunity to leverage up to almost $1.2 trillion for infrastructure in our country.
That sounds good.
And so it sounds good on the surface.
Right.
And so really the disconnect that we were talking about yesterday in D.C. is how do you get states and local governments to understand the strategy? How do you get, particularly in states where there's more conservative governments, where they don't really support tax increases or rate increases, how do you get them to understand the critical crossroad we are at as it relates to infrastructure in this country, that when you make that local investment, that there is an opportunity to leverage other opportunities to maximize private dollars through the P3 or through the WIFIA program. And so what that does, it gives us an opportunity to access lower interest loans that would be a little bit more cost effective than going to the bond market. It also gives you an opportunity through private partnerships to look at other creative financing. There's a lot of things, as you probably are aware, in D.C. D.C. Water doing a lot of different things in terms of how do you finance these major capital investments to make sure that you are lessening the impact on the local ratepayer. And so we, being a part of the industry, have to work with EPA and we have to work with Congress to make sure that we are all speaking from the same hymnal and that we can get our state governors and our elected officials locally in our cities to understand the importance of investing in water and wastewater infrastructure.
Yeah. Obviously pointing out to them that these are big economic drivers
yes.
at a time when they're looking to grow economies and create jobs.
Right.
I mean, this is a terrific opportunity
right.
to do that.
Right.
Something else you talked about is water utilities as an economic engine, and particularly kind of looking at small businesses and minority businesses. Touch on that a little bit for me.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it seems like when you think about infrastructure, a lot of times we focus on, you know, the contractors and, you know, are we going to be able to have the availability of the contractors to do the work? And so one of the things that we're trying to focus on is making sure that not only do we have the availability of contractors, but we're also having economic inclusion amongst the contractors that we use. And so, you know, there's a lot of supplier diversity initiatives that are being talked about. And then also in Louisville, we're also wrapping up a disparity study,
okay.
a disparity study that is looking at the not only the availability, but if you're going to have inclusion goals that you set, that you can implement those and make sure that they are sustained long term. So we have been working on a disparity study, and of course, some of our great staff have been leading that effort and can probably speak more to it.
I'm Cherise Horn, MSD Procurement Manager.
So tell me about this work that Tony mentioned with disparity study.
So MSD embarked upon a disparity study in January of early 2016. We are just about in the final stages of it, so it took a little bit longer than we expected, but we wanted to make sure that we had uncovered every single thing that we needed to uncover to make sure how, you know, whatever the outcome is, that we're able to move forward and bring in any new initiatives that we need to bring forth. So it's just really a legally defensive mechanism to see, you know, what is our contracting community looking like? Are we, you know, providing work to all contractors, minority, women-owned companies as well. So just another tool in the toolbox, if you will, when you're looking, when you're talking about economic engines and inclusion.
And so have you wrapped it up, or are you in the final stages, or where
we're
is
in
it?
Final stages. So hopefully within the next month or so, we would have completed the disparity study,
okay.
and hopefully, you know, with the recommendations that the consultant provides to us, we'll be able to implement some new initiatives and move forward from there.
Did you see this happening in other utilities or other cities and say, okay, this is something we should do here?
St. Louis has recently completed a disparity study.
Okay.
It's not one that many utilities embark upon, but it is one that, you know.
Like the city government just.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but one that I think is needed. It kind of tells you where you are and then how do you move forward from there.
That's interesting. We'll have to look into the prevalence of this in the water sector and if it's something that's not really very common and might need to be a little more common
Absolutely.
For folks. So yeah, you guys might be leading the way on that front.
Yeah.
Well, we'll follow up with you and see what the results are for sure. I also want to ask you a little bit about the job link and local labor. What's going on there?
So in January of 2018, we launched JobLink, the MSD JobLink. And JobLink is just another tool in the toolbox, if you will, to help bring jobs to our communities, and especially those underprivileged areas in which we're working. You know, you think about the projects and you going into a community affecting, an entire community on a project that you're building and not really providing any economic engines to that community, which you're disturbing. So we wanted to launch JobLink, and it's, you know, basically a web-based tool for our workforce development agencies like our Louisville Urban League and Kentucky Inner Works. Just another avenue for them to go find employment for folks who are looking for opportunities and connect them with our contractors who may be working in their area.
Oh, wow. So this just launched
a
month or two ago. I imagine those entities were pretty excited about that, about creating another, you know, place for them to find employment. And any early traction or examples coming out of it?
Well, we've had a lot of positive feedback thus far. During our launch in January, we were anticipating five contractors. That was kind of our target, to get five contractors to get on board to uploading some projects and some opportunities. We had 54 contractors.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was exciting. They were excited to, you know, for the opportunity, and our workforce development agencies are definitely excited to connect folks. You know, you talk about job readiness training programs and things of that nature that they try to get, you know, folks prepared for.
Yeah.
But then you got to connect them with those jobs, and that's just another tool to help do that.
Very exciting. Well, that's something that we'll have to, just like the disparity study, we WEF, and the water sector will have to stay tuned and see how that that goes. But you've got 10 times the amount of initial interest as you expected. So that's encouraging.
It is.
Yeah.
We're excited.
All right. Thank you.
And the other thing I would add, and you know, a couple things that relates to JobLink, as she said, it's an additional tool in the toolbox, but it is not there to circumvent the labor union labor process. We want to work collectively with our labor unions and with our contractors and all of our workforce development stakeholders to make sure that we are maximizing the utilization of local labor with these major capital investments. Our board recently, in order to facilitate more contracts to be available for local labor, any contract, our policy is any contract that is over $5 million, the contractor has to set a local labor preference goal. And so now that we have that in place, we have to work with the unions, we have to work with our contractors, we have to work with workforce development groups to make sure that folks are aware of the type of skill craft areas our contractors are looking for. Whether it be a bricklayer or whether it be a fence installer or whether it be a street sweeper or a flagger, we will be able to analyze all of our projects and we will be able to tell the public these are the types of jobs that will be available. In Louisville alone, with Louisville MSD and Louisville Water Company, our capital programs sustain about 3,500 construction jobs on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot of jobs.
Absolutely.
And so we want to make sure that our local labor are being put to work on our jobs. And then we're also looking at the challenge of the utilities themselves because of aging workforce. We're losing our own employees as well. And so we've been working with a group called Water Agency Leaders Alliance that has been formulated over the last 3 or 4 years. A lot of GMs from a lot of major cities in America have come together to say, what can we do to influence workforce? And so we recently have been working with Senator Booker and Senator Capito have just filed legislation for a federal workforce development grant that would be available for utilities to develop workforce development programs for their operations, develop apprenticeship programs, youth programs, and other partnerships that would invite those that don't know about the career paths that are available in water and wastewater, that we can utilize some federal support and tie that with maybe a support from some other foundation. And interesting enough, we just got some feedback yesterday from the EPA's water finance group about working with us more collaboratively to figure out how we can also get them involved and how we're doing that. But there's going to be a lot of talk, I think, in April. There's Water Week coming up in D.C. And so we anticipate that we'll have sort of a tri-caucus congressional discussion with the Congressional Black Caucus and Hispanic Caucus and also the Asian caucus as well, because we want to make sure that we're getting in front of a lot of folks regarding this Senate workforce bill, because we marry that with the administration's infrastructure program. And then you have a sustainable, I guess you could say, a job readiness piece that is really going to benefit the communities. And that's how you get that state and that local government to understand the value piece that I mentioned earlier. so that folks can understand that it makes sense to invest more in our rates to replace our infrastructure, because on the back end, we're going to have jobs, we're going to have community sustainability and community resiliency, and we're also shoring up these aging systems because we don't want to end up with catastrophic events similar to what we had in New Orleans and other areas of our country.
It all just makes so much sense. You know? It does. It really does. Right. Just last issue, we've touched on a lot here, and I appreciate the time. I just wanted to get to affordability. That was something we talked about before the recording here, and how that's an issue in your city. And tell me what's going on and how you look at that.
Well, you know, affordability, we all, major cities, those that are CSO communities, have been through a complex affordability analysis to determine how much the community could afford to spend on these consent decree programs. And so we're very familiar with that threshold of when you see a percentage of your customer base that is using more than 2% of their median household income to pay their utility bills, then you start to see a crunch. And so we are watching that in Louisville. For example, about 40% of our customer base is at or above the 2% median household income. And so we know as we wrap up our consent decree work in 2024 and program in the critical repair work over the next 20 years, we know that there's going to be a larger sector of folks that are going to be above 2%. When you think about affordability and raising rates, we already have a senior citizens assistance program. We are going to have to expand that to have a more comprehensive wastewater rate assistance program because of what we're seeing as relates to the affordability concerns. A lot of folks don't understand that in some parts of our communities, folks are really struggling just to make ends meet. And so there has to be an offset. But then the back end piece that we have to promote as utilities and we have to promote as local governments is that there are job opportunities, there's community revitalization opportunities. All of those things will help. It will also allow us to folks to grow their businesses. It will also allow for new businesses to come in, increasing our tax base. And so it's all of a, it's all a formula. And so rate assistance is a part of that formula. And so I think I've heard that Detroit is also looking at it. There's a lot of other cities that are looking at it. I know DC Water has a rate assistance program. And so all of those are kind of mirrored after the LIHEAP program. And so, but it's just going to be funded by local dollars as opposed to federal dollars. As we go forward, I think we all need to be focused on comprehensive rate assistance programs for those that need it.
I really appreciate the time. This is a episode cramp-packed with a lot of good information and topics. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Words on Water.